this show, it's such a cool show for me to learn about not only places and people and languages, but like really, again, understanding how to look at our crazy human experience in different ways that I would have never considered. And then communicating that in a beautiful video that becomes like a love letter to the people and the place.
Welcome to Jump Podcast. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and experience the world outside your comfort zone and to do big, courageous things with your one life. Let this show be a source of advice and inspiration, and remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. This episode is supported by Osprey, my go-to luggage brand for everything since 2015, and by EcoChile, a one-stop shop for planning custom trips to Chile and Argentina. So stay tuned for more from them. And of course, we're supported by Jump Adventures and our own collection of epic adventure itineraries to Patagonia and beyond. Let us send you on your dream adventure. You can find out more and browse trips at jumpadventures.com. Hello, my friends. Welcome back, and thank you for choosing to listen to this episode today. I have a confession to make. I have done something today that I rarely ever do. I get a lot of requests by people all over the world to be on the show, too many that I actually don't even barely look at them. And so it actually means something really special that today's guest is here because of an email that she sent to me herself that really stood out to me. Her name is Jo Franco, and she is a storyteller and independent filmmaker. But guess what? She's also a polyglot, which means she's multilingual. She speaks a lot of languages. And as you probably know, at least I hope you do, so do I. And so her email immediately stood out to me. And after watching some of her stuff, I thought, oh, yes, let's meet Jo. Let's get her on the show to share her story, which we can all be a part of, too. And we'll get into that. So, Jo, thank you so much for reaching out in the first place and for taking the time to be here. I'm really excited.
Jackie, I am honored you opened my email and thought it was good enough to have me on the show. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, you, okay, so I think it really helps that you had a video that you know, you linked it in the email and I opened it and it was like, okay. I mean, it's like I kind of got bit by the Jo bug. I don't know, like there's something about you that's just like, I'm going to watch this whole thing, which was like 29 minutes, by the way.
So, it was not a short video.
No, it's not short. And we'll get to what that is. But first of all, before we jump forward, let's start with who you are and where you come from, because you have kind of a unique story. And that we got to start there to get to where you are now. So yes, please introduce yourself and let us know a little bit about where you come from and who you are.
Yeah, so it's funny because I was obviously stalking you for a long time and I was like, we have similar lives but in completely different origin stories, but we kind of ended up in similar paths. So I'm Jo, but it stands for Joanna, and I'm originally from Brazil. So I was born in Rio in Brazil. And I always think it's crazy that when I speak in English, I'm like, I wasn't supposed to speak this language. This was not my path. No one in my family was American. And I had the childhood coming to America story. My mom brought us to the US and we were raised in a really tiny town in Connecticut. So it's like as American as it gets, you know, like we were the first family that didn't speak any English. And I mean, I'm brown in a sea of kids with like this buttery white skin and I have this big curly hair and everybody has stick straight hair. It was just so different.
So different.
And, you know, those moments of feeling like things are foreign, and I know you feel this as well on your first trips, you just become almost like not only aware that human beings are different and that languages exist, but to me it became intoxicating because I was like, wow, this is really hard. And then I'm like, wow, this is really powerful. Like, imagine if I could learn this language and help my mom who didn't speak English. Imagine if I could help other people. And so this kind of planted the polyglot seed in my brain. And by the time I was around 15, I was already fluent in English, in Portuguese. I was helping the kids who spoke Spanish who were immigrating into the town. I was learning Italian, like I was just all hands on deck. Like, let me become this crazy little linguist.
Love.
And it was just like, it was so cool. Like, you think you know things and then you learn another language and you go back to square one. Mm-hmm. And you know we could talk about that. So basically, this created this international little businesswoman in me. I really wanted to be the CEO executive, you know, woman of color at the top of a media company. I don't know why media just always called to me to tell stories. And I went to school in Manhattan. I studied international business. And then I met a college buddy and he was like, I want to host a travel show. I'm like, well, I speak a bunch of languages and I would love to travel. And as an immigrant, that wasn't our narrative. We weren't told like, yeah, let's take a weekend trip. We never took family trips. We just weren't that. That wasn't our narrative. Like you worked and you worked some more and you studied. And so getting a chance to just like understand the concept of a weekend and filming those weekends and going to Baltimore and going to Boston and like creating these little stories with vlogs, it became so fun to me. But then, of course, because I'm an immigrant, I'm like, how do I turn this into a business? I can't just be having fun.
That's not because you're an immigrant. That's because you're a business person at heart. Like, that's like who you are. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess there was always this little entrepreneur in me, and my mom was very entrepreneurial. So I knew that we could create things that didn't exist. Like, I'd never really seen an example of someone who looked like me and making videos and traveling. That wasn't a thing I saw, let alone women. You know, travel shows are not run by women. And so by the time I graduated college, I'd started this little YouTube channel and it grew to over 1 million subscribers in the first 3 years. I worked and I worked and I worked. And that channel
had to bleep myself. Like, what?
No, yeah, throw the bleep in.
That's amazing.
Yeah, okay. That was the first like 6 years, 7 years of my career was just working on this YouTube channel and basically trying to prove that a show about young people traveling would work. So, of course, network said no, but my business partner and I, we would just post videos online and slowly and surely it grew this traction. The brand was called Shut Up and Go. And that was our motto. Like, yeah, you're not going to always have the money. You might not have all the time in the world, but stop making excuses. Shut up and go. And that was an amazing chapter. And then that kind of segued me into being invited to audition for a Netflix show. So I hosted 2 seasons of a Netflix show called The World's Most Amazing Vacation Rentals, which was so crazy. Loved that experience, boot camp of being on camera, and got to travel all over the world. And then after that, I was kind of like, how do I couple what I love so much about creating videos myself on YouTube with this like high quality serialized storytelling that I learned from the Netflix experience? And so this brings me into this new chapter where I'm funding and developing and filming my own travel docuseries called Translated, about languages around the world.
Specifically about kind of untranslatable aspects of languages around the world, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you a question. Okay. When you learn a new language, how do you feel about your personality, about yourself, about how you see the world?
This is such a good question because it's a thing. This is such a thing. I feel in a new language, even in one I've begun to study, I feel muted. Like my personality you don't have all of the tools, the linguistic tools that you need to show all of your personality, to be the person who jumps into a conversation or responds to every little thing. Like I'm a very expressive person. And so I've had conversations about this so much before, but yeah, where you don't have the tools in that language yet to just like, what are all these response comments that we use that just come so naturally to us? You need to learn all those things. I mean, there's like body language and all sorts of stuff. Like there are certain ways that I do show up as me, but I feel kind of muted when I'm in like a new, and that's weird. And it's hard for me and I hate it because I always want to be able to speak every language that I come across. Like I don't like traveling where I don't speak the language. I'm like, I got to learn something here because I hate not being able to communicate.
But then once you get over that hump and you do speak well enough to interject and be like, haha, that's so funny, que gracioso. How does that feel? Do you feel like yourself? Do you feel different? Like what changes in you?
That is when I feel like, okay, I've arrived. You know, like that's where I've got this language. That's what I think. And because it's so important to be colloquial with your friends and you can't fully grasp a language. I feel like if you're just so formal. Like, nobody actually speaks formally. We speak colloquially, And so once you can kind of unlock that, I think that's where I feel like I can show up as me. So
yeah
absolutely.
I think it's so funny, like, being an extrovert learning new languages, it really teaches you something about patience, and being an introvert for, you know, that brief second. So yeah. Every single language that I've learned in my life, I realize that not only do I have to learn something about myself, obviously, for all of these things that we're talking about, but also I learned something about how humans express themselves. Like, I have expressions from Portuguese, the language I was raised in, that don't land and are not translatable in English, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I started noticing, I'm like, that's so funny that there's like this depth in this language that I don't think anybody who only speaks English will ever understand, not with one word, but I could probably show it to them. I could show it to them through these different experiences. And so then I started realizing that this happened in every language that I spoke, that there were certain expressions like tant mieux in French, where it's like, you know, not, you know, it's even better. Like, oh yeah, even better that you did X, Y, and Z. And it's like, what? We wouldn't say that in English. Or, you know, saudade in Portuguese, this deep longing for someone or a place or a thing. Or in Dutch, the last episode I did is hoesting, which is like, it's kind of like tengo ganas in Spanish. Like, kinda, you have like this lust.
Intense craving thing. But
intense craving, yeah. But in a specific way that is only used in the north of Belgium. And I'm like, why does this expression exist? What does it say about the people and the culture there? And what can we all learn? Maybe you're not going to learn Flemish, aka Belgian Dutch. But what can you learn about the human experience and maybe an expression that is untranslatable that explains something you felt your whole life? So this show and like this whole journey that I'm on is, yes, it's about language, but really it's about human expression and giving people expressions to experience life in deeper levels from other cultures around the world.
I love it. This is why I was immediately drawn in to what you were doing, is because I understand. I've been there. I get it, you know, and so, and
I know you do. It's so cool.
But I also think this is so worthy of exploring, because most people have no idea. I would at least say most people in the US, because they're monolingual, you know, like they speak one language. They're maybe have aspirations to do something with another language, but they only get as far as Duolingo, you know. But the immersion, that point of really unlocking a language, changes everything, because it's more than just a language too. It's an entire way of life. Like, there's actually, I've said this quote so many times on this podcast. I love this quote. You've probably heard it. I have to think about it every time. You live a new life for every language you speak. If you speak only one, you live only once.
And that's it. I love that quote. And I personally feel like when you learn a new language, it's like getting a cheat code. If life is a video game, you get a cheat code to access a new level with like all new things. It's literally like new characters, new feelings, new possibilities. And I'm always constantly shocked. To give you an example, like, so I speak now 6 languages fluently enough to say I'm fluent.
Amazing. Congratulations, because that's not, that's Thanks. So hard.
And you know this, as someone who speaks more than 3 languages, your brain is like constantly forgetting stuff. So it's something that you have to continuously polish. So Dutch, aka Belgian Dutch, which is Flemish, is the last language that I learned because my partner is Belgian. I've been living in Antwerp in Belgium for 2 years now. And my partner is also a polyglot. So that's pretty cool. Like, he speaks 6 languages. Cool. I know. I'm like, this guy, love of my life. Like, the brain is attractive.
Yes.
So he was like, I was telling him in the beginning of our relationship, I was like, man, I don't know if I'll ever be able to learn this language. The grammar's all crazy. Like, I was really stumped. And he's like, what are you talking about? You're going to learn this language. I'm like, no. I'm trying my hardest. I can't figure this out. And he's like, come back to me and have this conversation in 6 months. And obviously, I was doing my studying. And he was right. I ended up learning it. Full new personality has been developed since then. And in the last 2 weeks, I reached out to get press for this second episode of Translated. And I was interviewed by Flemish news outlets. And the interviews were like in real time. One was in person and the other one was on a Zoom call. in Flemish. And they printed it on like 2-page spreads in the weekend edition of the biggest newspapers in the north of Belgium. And I was just like, this is crazy. Like, new level unlocked, career things unlocked. What do you mean? And like, I'm just speaking now to like a Dutch speakers agency to give keynote speeches in this language. I did not have that on my bingo card. You know, like, that wasn't something I thought I would do in my life. And that's, to me, the coolest part about learning languages is obviously you make so many new connections, relationships, but then you also open up all of these crazy opportunities that weren't even a concept in your mind.
Yep. And you can never know where that's going to take you. That's another part of it is it's, I mean, when I remember being, before I learned to speak Spanish fluently, I remember thinking, oh, to be bilingual, what a dream, you know? And the goal was to be fluent in two languages. And that was as far as I was seeing. And once I went and did that thing and became fluent, it was like, yeah, what's next? I'm not even done with university. Like, what do I study now? Like, I'm done with my major and I'm a sophomore in college, you know, like, what is left? And so you just move on, you keep going. But for people like us, like, that's exactly what you do. You keep going. Because I love the video game thing. It's like unlocking another level. I've never thought about it like that before, but that hits.
Literally, like, do 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 do, like the Mario Underground. You're like, oh dang, like, no one knows I'm down here. And that's the craziest thing too, like, the more language I learn, the more connection, like, deep connections I make. I have friends in Belgium that only speak Flemish, which is rare because many people, you know, they speak English. But it's crazy to me to think, like, my family, my American Brazilian family, they will never be able to connect to these people that I connect deeply with for the simple fact that there's a language barrier.
Yep.
And to me, that's like partially heartbreaking and also extraordinary that, like, we all can if we want to. Obviously, some of us have a little bit more natural instinct towards languages, so I'm not going to deny that. But, you know, like, even if you speak with an accent, even if you make grammatical mistakes, it's still possible to unlock layers of your life and just, like, go into the unknown. It's very humbling as well. It's like the ultimate lesson in learning to love your failures. I always say it takes many fails to become fluent-ish.
Oh, yeah.
Ish. Yeah, you always be fluent-ish. I have a neon light in my room about it. Yeah.
It's fluent-ish, honey. The microphone is like going through it. And so I've been looking at that, like, what is that?
Yeah, like, but here it is.
Say fluent-ish.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I think, well, I mean, it's, and it takes a lot, like you said, it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of dedication. You got to stick with it. I mean, I learned Portuguese in like 5 minutes, but it was forever ago. You know, like, I had already had Spanish. I already had Italian, and Portuguese was just a matter of like, well, let's apply this filter to that code and that accent. And, you know, it's like there's a couple things. Well, a couple
well, you
things
pick
that
the
are
patterns
different.
Up.
But yeah, patterns, exactly. Right? And then there are things that the big parts, the big heavy moving verbs that like you got to learn that are different. But otherwise, it's such a similar language that it was really quick for me to pick up. But I was only there for a month in Brazil. I lived in Brazil for a month. And that was almost 20 years ago now. Yeah.
It was 2008. Crazy, Jackie.
I know. And so, like, what? So it's like somewhere way back there. And when I hear it, especially Brazilian Portuguese, because that's the accent that I learned, you know, it's like, yeah. And then I like go to speak back and it's like,
you're like, so, eu falo like Portuguese.
It's like a rough Spanish mix of, yeah, kind of probably what it sounded like when I first got to Brazil. But I mean, give me a few days and I'll be fluent-ish.
Give you another 5 minutes. Yeah, it's coming back to you. But that's the beautiful thing. And like, you can connect to people so deeply. Something else that I noticed and like why I really wanted to make this show is, so I translated this docuseries that I decided by myself. No one asked me to make this, but I'm like, I really want to make something that I'm proud of. Like, on my deathbed, I want to look back and be like, I created love letters to places and people and languages that I think are so special. And as I started thinking about what the show would be, because at this point I had experiences making several shows. Like, I was on the Netflix show. I was hired for National Geographic as a producer and talent last year, which was so cool. Amazing. For a show about Italian culture outside of Italy. And I'd done tons of different hosting gigs where, like, I was on set with 15 people or even more, and people yell action and you have to have your lines. But I'm like, okay, if I'm to zoom out and be a producer, how would I make this show? And the crazy thing is, producers would reach out to me and want to hire me. They're like, hey, Joe, we'd love for you to host a show. What are your passions? And this happened like many, many times. And I'm like, language is my passion. And they're like, no, multiple people said language is not visual enough. Language is too heady. Language is not food. It's not houses. Can we dumb it down? And I'm like, no. We're not going to dumb it down, because I believe that people are smart enough to care about this stuff. But maybe you, producer, have never learned a language, so you don't understand what this really means in your heart. So then I enrolled in a master's of filmmaking that was a negotiated degree, which meant I created my own curriculum to achieve my desired outcome. And my desired outcome, you know, just like adding that on. And so my desired outcome was like, what would it look like to create a 6-part docuseries, or maybe even longer? And like, what does every episode actually have to make it cohesive? And I'm building it in public, right? So the first episode, the one that you mentioned you watched, is about a Greek word specifically from Thessaloniki, Greece, which is the second largest city. And the word is halara, which on the surface means like, chill out, hang loose, like just take it easy. And everybody kept telling me, like, Joe, if you want to experience Thessaloniki, you need to know halara. I'm like, what? What does that really mean, right? Let's dive in. So this was the pilot episode. And I was like, okay, how do I approach this? Not from a linguistic point of view, but from like an experience of people living there point of view. So I just went on my Instagram and I asked all my followers, like, hey, is anybody in Thessaloniki? Who wants to guide me around? What is interesting? What do we eat? What do we do? Hey, is there a camera crew I could hire? Hired a local crew. We're walking around all day long in Thessaloniki. And the episode was like way better than I could have imagined, because in that 29-minute episode, you kind of get transported to not only Thessaloniki, Greece, but you understand halara in various different lenses, and also the depth of what halara means for the Greek people. Like, if you know anything about Greece, you know economy is not the strong suit. And so one of the interviews I did on that episode, I asked the woman, like, is halara a good thing or can it be a bad thing? Because if you guys are just like hanging out, who's making money? How does that work in a young person's life? She's like, Joe, actually, it's the opposite. When you don't have much money, us Greeks, we understand that relationships are the thing that's going to help us. And so halara is about connecting with the people that you love in your community, because if you don't have money, what's left? And even if you have money, what's left? Like, to us, it's the bonded relationships. That's where the value is. So if I'm working for an hour and I'm getting 5 euros, I'm spending 4 of those euros on a coffee with my dear friend, because that relationship is the, you know, is what is worth more to me. So I'm like, oh my God. And so basically every episode goes down this rabbit hole of like, okay, new country, new language. I try to learn as much of the language as I possibly can. And then we go into this journey to go deeply into the culture.
So what is the second episode about then? Because you just mentioned that the halara was for the pilot.
Yeah.
But then hosting was the first episode. So I'm a little confused.
No. So halara, pilot episode, episode one, let's call it. And then episode two, which I also consider a pilot because I'm still testing it out.
Okay.
Pilot is just a fancy way of saying like, hey guys, it's a workshop, right? Like every episode will get better. Technically, every episode will be a pilot in season one. Okay. So halara was the concept pilot. Like, is this a concept that people would watch? And then I sent it out to my newsletter list and people were able to watch it before I published it. They gave me all of this feedback through Google Forms, really a cool way to build something in public. I read hundreds, literally, I think there were 850 responses of people who watched the video before it was live and filled out the responses. So imagine just getting like a truckload of feedback. Took all of that feedback, the pieces that I wanted to reintegrate into the episode. And then with the feedback, I re-edited the halara episode and then published that one on my YouTube channel recently, like in April. April, May? Yeah.
Okay.
And then I started production on the second episode, this was last year. So this has been a long multi-year process, right?
Like, yeah.
So last year I shot a concept or a new pilot from scratch, given all of the feedback from episode one. So I got what people said that they loved and what they wanted to see more of. And then I produced a fully new episode. And I'm like, okay, if it works again, then we really have a show here, you know?
Yeah.
And the second episode is Husting, which your pronunciation was perfect, by the way. Amazing. You could probably speak Flemish in 5 minutes.
Wow. I mean, maybe I'll come over and try it. I don't know.
Come. We'll eat some waffles, have some beer, you know, be merry.
Good. I haven't been to Antwerp. I've done other parts of Belgium, but I've never been to Antwerp. So
okay, well, there's that. In the video, I show how cool Antwerp is.
I did see this one. This is the one I watched.
Okay,
this
perfect,
the,
perfect.
The Belgium one is the one that I watched.
Okay, nice. And so the Halara one was the one right before that. So then you have a second episode to watch.
Yeah. And yeah. Before we go any further, can you tell people where they can find all these things? Because we're going to keep going on all of this. So
I yeah. love it. Yeah. So it's all for free on my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/JoFranco. Joe Franco is my name. And I'm posting also like a vertical series version on my Instagram. And my Instagram is @JO_Franco because I'm actually curious. It's all one big experimentation. I'm like, you know, maybe people don't have 27 minutes to sit down and watch a full length documentary style episode, but y'all got a minute and 30 seconds, you know? And mm-hmm. So this is like part two of this whole experimentation, just seeing where people see things and watch things and then taking all of this as a learning experience as well.
Sure. Yeah. And honestly, this is going to take you somewhere. Like, it just will. It's going to take you somewhere.
I hope so. You know, the thing about doing this, too, is it's fully self-funded. And I actually pitched it to a partner that I've had for years. And last year, I showed them the concept pilot, the one about Halara, the Greek one. So this is like the bare bones version. And the brand was like, Joe, how do we support this? We want to help you fund this. And they actually gave me a huge contract. And then I turned it down like a crazy person.
Why?
Because what? I was like, you know, I looked at the contract and I'm like, I really love this brand. I respect this brand. I want to work with this brand. But before I commit to making something for anybody else, I need to see what the show needs to be. And if you've ever made truly like a creative project, it takes time and that's a lot of pressure already. And so I didn't want to add more pressure to have deliverables for a brand.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
On top of the pressure that I feel to tell these stories well and to tell these stories in the best way I could possibly tell them. So basically, I decided then and there that I would put my money where my mouth was, invest in the first season myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's cool because I am investing in this, right? So I'm not phoning it in. I'm like really reaching out. I'm really saying, hey, this is something I believe in and that let's see where it goes. I have literally no idea where it's going to go.
Well, I imagine it's going to take you a lot of places and then it's going to take you somewhere else. Like, I mean, it's I just feel like there's so much potential. And so first of all, congratulations, because it's beautiful work.
Thank you.
You absolutely have the personality for it. I'm like, yes, this is why I was like, I need to meet this girl, we need to be friends. Like,
I know, I feel the same thing. I'm like, Jackie, why haven't we been friends sooner?
I know. I love it.
We'll come right back to that, but first let's thank the brands that support our show. Let's talk about a new bag from Osprey that's getting awards and lots of hype, the Scuffle. What in the world is a scuffle? Well, if you put square and duffel together, you get scuffle, which is exactly what this bag is, a square-shaped duffel. Now, just to be clear, when it's all zipped up, it's rectangular and easy to carry with its stowaway backpack straps. But the coolest feature about this bag is that you not only have the option of opening it via the U-zip panel access to the top, but you can also unzip all the way around the perimeter of the bag, opening it up like a clamshell, which creates a square. If you need help imagining this, go to osprey.com and check out the Scuffle. That's Scuffel, to see this magic that I'm talking about. I love the clamshell option because I am a very organized packer. And with everything in its proper packing cube, I can further organize by packing clothes on one side of the clamshell and gear and toiletries on the other. There are zip dividers to keep the contents of each side secure, and these dividers are roll away if you prefer not to use them. I love a good versatile bag, and that's exactly what the Scuffle is. It comes in both 44 and 70 liter sizes, so you can carry it on or check it if you want. The zippers all slide super smoothly, which is important to me. It has burly webbing grab handles on every side. Its Blue Sign approved nano tough exterior is remarkably strong and highly water resistant. So it's absolutely worthy of being thrown into the back of a pickup truck full of hockey gear for an away tournament. And when you get to said tournament and realize the rain leaked through the shell of the back of the truck, you'll be relieved that only your hockey gear is wet, not your clothes that were packed safely and securely inside your new Scuffle. I wish I could say I wasn't speaking from experience on that one, but that is exactly why the Scuffle gets full approval from me and two thumbs up. You can find the Scuffle and all the packing cubes that fit perfectly inside it at osprey.com. Are you interested in traveling to Patagonia or anywhere else in Chile or Argentina? Of course you are. I have good news, not so good news, and great news for you. The not so good news is that it's often logistically super challenging to plan trips to certain destinations in Chile and Argentina because of advanced permitting, limited capacity, vast distances between locations, border crossings, and a myriad of other bureaucratic issues. The good news is that my friends over at ecochile.travel and ecoargentina.travel can handle all of these logistics for you and help you plan the trip of your dreams. They are local, they know the systems, they speak the language, they also speak English, and building custom trips is what they do. I've traveled with EcoChile before. I actually went to Easter Island through them on my last trip to Chile, and I was mind blown at how well I was treated as a traveler. The amount of support and materials they provided me made me feel like I was in such good hands. And for me, being the one who usually does all the planning, oh my goodness, it feels so good to be taken care of, like to the last little detail, especially because I had not been to Easter Island before. I trusted their expertise and my experience was even better than I imagined. Whether you know exactly what you want to experience in a destination or you don't, EcoChile will work with your interests, travel style, budget, time frame, and take care of every piece of your itinerary that you want them to handle. Think nature, hiking, wildlife, boutique lodges, road trips, local culture, and real connection with the destination, all while having reliable logistics and support throughout your entire trip. That's what EcoChile provides. And the great news is that when you go to ecochile.travel or ecoargentina.travel to book with them, you can receive 5% off your trip. Just select Traveling Jackie in the inquiry form or mention me in your email, phone, or WhatsApp message. Go to ecochile.travel and start your dream trip planning today. Don't forget to tell them Traveling Jackie sent you. And thank you, wherever you are, for listening to the show and supporting these brands that help make it possible.
So I'm sure you have lots of words kind of stacking
lined up.
I'm curious, is fiaka one of your words in Croatian?
No.
Okay, can we add that
I
to your
love
list?
That. Okay, wait, I'm adding it to my list. Tell me what it means.
I think it was fiaka. Well, it's hard to
translate.
It's not translatable. It's one of these words. But here's what I remember about this word. This is going to be like an unfinished story, but here we go. I was on a bike trip in Croatia, one of my group trips, and we're on the island of Hvar, which is the Lavender Isle, and we get to the top of the 6-mile climb, and there's a woman up there with a little dog in a basket on the back of her bike, and we all, you know, melted and just kind of were chatting with her, and this is where we learned about this word, fiaka. And so you were telling me about halara, and I think that maybe it's the same vein of like being kind of chill and like enjoying, almost like it is dolce far niente. Like, I don't know. There's some, which of course was Italian. I don't know how to say this in English, but it's like, how about this? I'm not going to say it. Why don't we wait until there's an episode about it? Because it's so something that needs to be dug into in Croatia proper, you know, like they know what it actually means.
And you know, like when you start diving into this stuff, like I genuinely get chills because I think there's so much, it's not linguistic. This has to do with history. This has to do what the people of the place have been through. Croatia specifically has been through so much. And when you've been through so much, it gives you a deeper sense of what it means to live. And in this case, if the word is like dolce far niente, I can imagine from a Croatian perspective, that means a lot. That means something completely different than dolce because far niente or jalará, yeah, because of the context, right, because of the history, because of the landscape, right? Like, so all of these things are what I nerd out about every episode that I make. Yes. And I like buy these gigantic history books and I interview a million people and I try to see it from a nature perspective. I try to see it from a city perspective, from the economic perspective, from the youth perspective or the older, you know, generations perspective. And then we can try our hardest to tell a story that comes from this place that becomes like this emotional and intellectual and like deep souvenir that, again, whether you go to Croatia, learn Croatian or not, you can still start thinking about your life through that lens and then maybe be inspired to go and see it for yourself.
Maybe I'll go to Croatia and help you with that one.
I would love it. Like, I know, special guest.
Croatia is one of my favorites.
I love Croatia. Mm, I really love it.
That corner of the world is just like, makes my heart beat.
Have you gone to Istria where it's like semi-Italian?
I'm going next year.
Okay, gotta go truffle hunting. Gotta do the full thing. Get the white truffles. And then you get to use your Italian as well, because a lot of people will just straight up speak Italian there.
I did not know that. But I will tell you, the first night that I arrived in Croatia, granted, this was August. This was 2015, by the way. So this is like... lifetimes ago.
Way back.
Yeah. But it was August. And August, that's important because like all of Italy is on vacation in August. And so, you know, they're everywhere. Italian is being spoken in like all of the European countries at that time because all the Italians are everywhere. But I got to Croatia and I was amazed at how much Italian I was hearing. And I thought, I didn't realize, I like didn't put together, I was jet lagged, that it was, you know, August and it really is Italians.
Like Ferragosto.
Like, oh my gosh, they speak. Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, I'm in Split, right? I'm like, they speak Italian here? Like, there's so many Italians speaking here. And like, oh wait, hold on. They're just on vacation.
That's funny.
But I mean, yeah. But I mean, it also makes sense because, you know, Croatia was under Venetian rule for 500 years. So there's a ton of leftover Italian anyway.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
But Istria, like being right across from Venice, that's,
it's
just made
so
me excited.
Cool. Ooh, and there's a so bike excited. Trail that you can bike. And it used to be a railroad trail. I'll send you the details after this. It's beautiful.
I'm sure we're going to be on it because it's going to be
amazing.
A bike trip. So, yeah.
Great.
Yay. Oh, fun. Fun times. Okay. So are you in Antwerp right now?
No. So I also have family in Connecticut. And so I go between the U.S. and Antwerp, but mostly Antwerp. Like right now it's summer holidays, you know, family stuff. And that's like another layer of this international lifestyle that I'm actually curious how you manage, like family versus passion. Like my heart is spread all around the world.
Oh, yes.
And you know, having yep. been raised also with my Brazilian family, like dad's still in Brazil, aunts, uncles, cousins, like we are genuinely 100% Brazilian. And so my mom was this wild woman who took her three kids to Connecticut, but like we were always growing up in between the cultures.
Yep.
And then the irony is now I've gone another, you know, continent away. So now when I'm in Belgium, I'm like, dang it, I gotta call dad in Brazil, I gotta call mom in the US, I have friends here, you know, my in-laws are in Belgium. It's just like absolutely wild. Do you have any tips?
Oh God, well, not ones that might be practical for help. I don't know, that's a really hard question. That's like the biggest question you can possibly ask is like, oh, do you have any tips, right? But here are two things that I know. One, I used to feel divided, very divided. I used to feel like I left little pieces of me everywhere. And it like breaks my heart even now to think about that. Like that makes me want to cry because I have all of these experiences and lives. Yeah. And I'm tearing up as I'm saying this because it's so real for me. Like I lived in Costa Rica. That was who I was for a year. You know, I lived in Italy. That's who I was for a year. I have this life in Montana, which is where I have ultimately chosen my home base. I have chills all over me. Like, and I've traveled. I mean, I've lived in Argentina. I've lived in Mexico. I've spent a lot of time in the Balkans. Like there are places that just make up who I am, right?
Yeah.
And I finally realized that instead of leaving bits of myself everywhere, that I've made my life like multiplied. Like I'm not divided. I am multiplied. Like I have so much that I get to carry with me, that I am now, that's now part of me and my story, wherever I am. And so I have this sense of, well, like wholeness almost. Like I didn't leave that behind. I have it with me. It's part of my story. It's part of who I am. And it also makes me feel a sense of belonging everywhere. Because that's just a fact. Like, I know this to be true. This is a fact. Wherever I am, I belong there, you know, and that's part of my story. The second thing is that I have made my home base in Montana because it's a place I keep coming back to. It's the one place stateside that is my favorite place to say where I'm from. Like, it's my favorite place to call home is Montana. It's as simple as that. It's also very complicated, but it's as simple as that on the surface. Yeah. It's just, this is the place that I, no matter how far and wide I travel, you know, a part of me is brought to life here. And my family is also close-ish. I mean, I have a brother here. My parents are still back in California, different places. But yeah, I mean, with family all over, with friends all over, it is hard to kind of triangulate yourself on this globe of like, well, where do I really belong? And I think knowing that I belong wherever I am, like I choose that. And then this is where I'm making my home base. This is not necessarily, it doesn't have to be anything forever. Nothing's permanent. Everything's changeable. Everything's figure outable. That's what I always say, you know, but as long as this place feels like a good home base for me, that's what it's going to keep being for me. That's it. And that's also kind of a simple idea, but what else do we have to hold on to when we're citizens of the world, when we're global people, you know, when we feel drawn to so many places? And then the thing that I have to do is pepper in travel just constantly. It only takes me about 6 weeks before I get itchy and start watching planes again. I mean, I watch planes all the time. I'm like, oh, that one's like coming
tracking
from Denver.
Them. Like, yeah, like literally with the apps.
Yo, yeah, I love it. I'm such a nerd like that. But it makes me feel like, oh yeah, that's who I am. It makes me feel good to look at planes and know where they're going and remember that, like, there's people constantly passing over me. I just heard a plane go over my house, you know? I know the ones that wake me up at 6 a.m. Oh, that one's going to Salt Lake, you know?
It's like, I love it. It's just,
she is flight radar.
I am. That's the app.
Of course. So funny. Yeah, so it's something that you can't escape, but I really love your perspective that you're not divided, you're multiplied. Like, you, nothing is being taken away from you, it is just being added. And I think that that's like a mental gymnastics that is the best way to look at it, because otherwise you'll always live your life with this longing, which actually plays into my third episode for Translated that I'm currently editing.
I think I know what the word is.
Okay,
just by you saying that. You want me to guess it?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess what the word is. I think that's saudade.
Okay, close.
Oh.
But no. Okay.
What is it?
Even crazier. So, you'll hear it here first. I decided that I really wanted to go to Wales, because Wales... I know on your last episode, you were talking about like third tier travel, like a place people would never go to.
Yeah.
I feel like Wales is that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally on my list right now. I've been binging Wrexham. I'm like,
yeah, it's so freaking cool. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go to Wales. I want to learn as much Welsh as I humanly possibly can before I go. So I gave myself 3 weeks. I studied Welsh like a wild child. And I actually did learn some Welsh. Okay, very challenging.
That's a hard language. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I produced this entire episode. But the way that it works is like, I can only produce so far, because the truth is, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so I found this word called hiraeth, which hiraeth is on all the lists of untranslatable words, similar to saudade, actually. It means longing, but it means specifically longing for usually a place. So with Wales and the history of Wales, Wales was always under siege. People were always trying to grab Wales, right? And so the Welsh people have this really deep connection to their country, to their land. And there's even a huge Welsh speaking community and like a Welsh pocket
in, I believe it's Patagonia.
Argentina.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's near Patagonia,
yeah,
right?
It's Patagonia. Like, it's on the coast. So it's on the eastern side of Patagonia. But yeah, in Argentina, that exists.
Yeah. So there's like this Welsh pocket of people who speak Welsh, who are Welsh with this like Spanish twist, which is so cool.
Totally Argentinian. So, yeah.
Yeah. And this concept of hiraeth, this longing, which is kind of similar to saudade, it was the word that I thought I would be investigating. So I thought, okay, I'm going to make this whole episode about hiraeth, about longing for a place. What does this mean? And hiraeth could also be for something that never existed. So it's like a piece of you is missing, right? Like a piece of you is fundamentally elsewhere. When I got into Wales, I realized there was something actually that wasn't missing at all. And then I found out about this other untranslatable word called cnefin. And it's actually kind of like the opposite of hiraeth, which it's untranslatable, but it's the connection that you have to your community. So it's kind of like habitat, like the scents, the people, the sounds, all of the things that go into you finding this cozy habitat that is just for you. And I'm like, oh my God. So like, again, that's the episode that I'm working on now, because it's such a cool show for me to learn about not only places and people and languages, but like really, again, understanding how to look at our crazy human experience in different ways that I would have never considered. And then communicating that in a beautiful video that becomes like a love letter to the people and the place.
Yeah, it's so whole. Like it feels complete, because it's not any one of those things, which is what that other producer wanted you to do, was to dumb it down and pick one thing. It's all of those things, plus the history and the context and everything else and the community. And it gives you an idea of what, I mean, language is so particular to culture.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize that unless they do speak more than one language, because, oh gosh, this just got complex. I'm like, now I'm thinking about, well, think about it this way. I'm about to tangent. Buckle up.
Let's go down the road.
Do you dream, and do you like study your dreams at all? Totally.
I have.
Question.
Yeah, I've dabbled, and I definitely wake up every single day like, what the heck is that about?
Okay, so I've kept a dream journal for like 10 years, and I have really vivid dreams, like lucid dreams. Like I'm a big dreamer, and so I pay attention to them a lot because they fascinate me. And one of the things I've learned is that our dreams reflect our language. And so in different languages, like people from different cultures are going to have dreams about different things, and they're not translatable. Like you can't,
no.
I couldn't, for example, if we were speaking in Portuguese and you explained to me this dream that you had, I couldn't break it down in English for you. I'd have to do that in Portuguese, because your language is what it's so intrinsic. It's so like, it written into your subconscious that's how you work, you know? And I mean, we know about all these cultures that don't have words for like, thank you or something, you know, they just, or like the way that the language changes, and that's how they live too. Like it's
like
it reflects
how you think. Yeah. Yeah. It's how you think. It's how you see potential. It's how you see what success means, what failure means, what relationship means, what love means. Like in Dutch, the first thing I asked, I was like, how do you say I love you? And then I found out that there are two ways to say I love you. Ik hou van u, which means like I hold you dearly, like I love you. But then it's ik zie je graag, which means I see you well. Like it literally translates, if you're to translate it word for word, it's I see you. And my partner was like, but you don't say ik zie je graag. You don't say that unless you really mean it. Like it's not like English, I love ice cream and I love you. It's reserved.
Right.
And yeah. Like in Greek, yeah. I think there are like seven different ways of saying beautiful. And it's like, okay, what, you know, what does that mean? And how do you, was that Greek? Or maybe there are seven different ways to say I love you in Greek. And in Welsh, there are seven different ways or more to say something's beautiful. Like every language has their quirks. Or in Welsh, another thing that I found out, the language is connected to the land. And my teacher was like, Joe, you don't say, oh, get it together, come to your senses. You say, you need to come to your trees.
Oh, God.
Like the language tells the story of how the people see reality in the world and what's possible.
Yeah. And in Alaska, I think the natives have like 20 something or maybe even more words for snow.
Exactly. It's so cool. It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
I know. Like, how is this not so fascinating?
I know.
Everybody?
I know.
Everybody, how do you not want to create a show about this, people? Like,
it's really heady and it's really difficult. Like, I got to say, like, again, I finished my master's last year, which was super cool. Finished top of my class.
Congrats.
And it was, it was an excuse for me to put a deadline onto this project because I have a whole nother life. Like, I still make content. I get paid to do different things to get, you know, do shows for other people, other brands. I host shows for other platforms. And it's so cool to be able to do that. But this project, really, it's like my life's work. I see it as my life's work. And the more I do it, the more overwhelming it seems, which is why I always say to everybody, anybody who's following me, anybody who's watching, you're officially a co-producer of mine. What you say in the comments, I will read and I will integrate as best as I can into the next episodes. And so, yeah, it's definitely making it a funner process to feel like, you know, you do your part and then the audience co-creates it with you.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of the internet as well. And I'm sure in your travels, like you run group trips, you know how this works. We're living in an age where you put up a post and suddenly you're actually connected to real human beings on the other side of the world that become your actual friends, or they change your life in some way. And you're like, wait a minute,
completely.
From username to like the reason I found out about the word Cnefin in Wales. Like it doesn't really make any sense, but I'm like, this is also something that I know traditional producers do not have access to doing, which is being able to work with the audience as co-producers and having that be like, yeah, these little partners, they're partners in this process, as opposed to doing everything behind closed doors and only getting feedback when everything is perfectly done, which I'm like horrified at that concept. You know, I'm like, I want to work so that every episode gets better and better.
Not everybody has it in them to do that though, too. So I think that that's another thing that sets you apart and makes what you're doing so special and so interesting for, you know, the people listening, for you, for the audience, because they do get to be part of it. That's like when I, as a person on a mic right now, you know, I'm also always asking people to, like, you know, reach out, say something back to me. When I send my emails, I'm like, you can hit reply.
Please reply.
You
know?
Like, I'm here, to actually read. And some people have figured that out and they're, you know, they write me a lot and it's really neat. And then there are the other people who have actually shown up on the trips and they have literally become my best friends. I mean, it's
insane.
We're all like
right?
real people, you know, and we find the communities that we're meant to be in. Like your word, can you say it
the
again?
The Cnefin, yeah. The community, the whole like atmosphere of what it means to feel cozy.
Yes.
And yeah, it's so crazy because it seems like people on microphones or with cameras, it seems like they're so different. But we're just like girls. We're just working in the wee hours of the night, jet lagged, like clicking publish and hoping someone cares. And yeah, I think having the experience you have with running trips and telling people, hey, click reply, like hit reply and like send me a note. I think that's the coolest way to live this career where we're building stuff and we're doing this online. Like it's such a crazy career that didn't exist 25 years ago. That's only getting started. Like I really do believe media, high quality content is shifting more into the hands of the creators. But there's a huge learning gap. There's a huge learning gap, which is why I wanted to get my master's. I'm like, I had a successful career vlogging. I knew what it was to pull up in a country, no planning whatsoever, film myself for 3 days and chop it up into a really funny and entertaining vlog that would get a bunch of views, you know? Mm-hmm. I know what that is. I could do that. But what would it look like to do something a little bit more high quality with actual thought? Something that I could really be proud of. And I knew that there was a skills gap there. But like the access we have to clicking publish is always there, no matter which way you shake it.
Yeah. I also think it's worth mentioning the amount of labor for this love. You know, it's a labor of love. But what I what I really appreciate and I see you for and like respect about what you're doing is that you have, in a way, shut that door and said, you know what? I don't need what you're telling me to do because I know what I need to do. This is my show. This is my path. This is my life. I am the one with the reins and I get to decide what content gets published. I have that ultimate say and I want to do this project. This yeah. is what I want to spend the days of my life creating so that I can, you know, at the end of the day, say I'm proud of that. And I just got chills. Ooh.
Oh, it's really crazy because you have to turn all the clutter down.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which is why I commend you for also bringing in the audience and letting them have a say, because it's really hard. It's really hard to do that. I mean, to let them have a say when something is your baby, but it's also your creative skills. And so yeah. sometimes they don't actually know what they're talking about, you know, but if they are interested in seeing a certain thing, then yeah, of course, like the constructive feedback is helpful. But the power, going back to what you're saying about, you know, being in this day and age of creation is, I mean, the power that we have to say, this is a thing that I want to build. This is worthy of my time and the days of my life. While I'm here, you know, let's go do that. And the fact that you have given yourself the education and you're going after it and you're getting it and you're paying for it by yourself. And you even said no to a sponsor because it didn't perfectly align with your
yeah.
idea. That's incredibly inspiring, really. It's and I just want people to hear that, because I mean, for me right now, my project is books. I'm writing books, and it's similar because it's like, oh man, I have to pour myself into this. In the end, when the first one is done, whether I get an agent, have a publisher or not, I don't know. Or I might have to fund it myself. You know, I don't know yet. But I know that this is worth the time of my, like, and I
of your gained, life.
Yes, exactly. It's worth spending this time. I'm choosing that this is the thing that I need to do. Just like what you're doing. You know, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not for everybody. But this is your superpower, and you're doing it.
Yeah. And so you were saying, what are you gaining? Like, what are you gaining from this work that is very different from you record a podcast and then maybe next week it's live. Maybe there's a 2-week buffer, whatever it is. It's way more instant gratification than you write a book for a year or 6 months or whatever. And then you have to wait for the payoff. What are you gaining in that process? Because it is different.
This is a real question, right?
Yeah, it's a real okay. question.
I love this question. And it is different because... this goes back to me understanding what I'm here to do. And having my personal goals. I'm a big goal person. I don't have to have goals all the time, but I do set goals. I believe in them. I think it's important because I'm super ambitious. And so I need to know what it is I'm working for. And there is always... in every chapter of my life, in all of the versions of my lifetimes, there has always been this goal of writing books and just being like a published author. And I did a self-published book ages ago, a few lifetimes ago. It's no longer available. That was like 13 years ago. So I went through that process and that was pretty neat. But now I'm like, okay, I need to do it for real. Like it's almost like that was like my pilot, you know, way back
yeah,
in the day.
Yeah, exact concept and, pilot.
Yeah. And now like I know what I'm doing. I know what my story is. I know what I want to do. And that's an idea that never, it's a goal that never goes away. It's always there. So if people ask me, what do you want to do with your life? I mean, not like people ask me that all the time because that's kind of a big question. But, you know, when I ask myself, like, there's always that, oh, when I picture my dream house, guess what's always in it? A writing
my
room.
Book like, and books.
Yeah. I mean, that's just part of who I am. And so when you ask, what do you get out of that? It's a fulfillment that I alone need to show up for.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's really like, and also if it helps someone in the end, bonus, right? But it's not, this is not necessarily a thing I'm doing for them. It's actually very much not. It's a thing I'm doing for me because I need to be able to, I've got to do this. I need to have this thing live, like real in my hands. Then I need to do the next one and the next one. And then like, it just, that's what I see. I will do it because I am that person.
It's interesting because you've accomplished many things in your life. And so when you look back and you're like, dang, how is the write a book goal consciously not being the priority, right? And I have some theories on this because I also had translated this show in my mind for 5 years.
Okay.
Every single year, actually longer. Like I knew that I wanted to do something a little bit more profound in like 2017, 2016. And it took me 10 literal years and a master's degree and a Netflix show and a Nat Geo. And then I'm like, okay, I think it's time. And like, maybe that was the right thing. And I do believe it was the right thing. But don't you feel, and I definitely felt this with Translated, that because this thing is so important to you, because it's been on your mind for so many years, that it makes it that much harder. Like the resistance is that much bigger and the pressure you put on yourself is that much greater because it really matters to you. It's not like a random side quest. Like this is a goal for life type of a thing. How do you manage that?
I totally hear you. And it's really easy to let all these other things, the more instant gratification, the we also have to pay the bills. So things that make money, you know, like all those things, to let them fill in the calendar. The problem is the more you push out the big project, the more you push it out and it's still not happening and it's still there.
Yeah.
And finally, mm-hmm. I mean, it was actually during my sabbatical. I took a sabbatical 2 years ago for 2 months and just like shut everything down. And I like to say I threw the plate at the wall because I was ready to just like let it all go. I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know what I needed to figure out a lot of things. And I ended up picking the plate back up and putting some things back on it, but not everything. And I've adjusted my life so that I've let some things go that used to be in the forefront. But part of the reason that I did that is because this big goal that I have is still just knocking at the door. And I've even started, I had even started writing it. I think I started it in 2021, technically, is when I first sat down with this idea to write this particular book. And last year, this is August of 2026. Last year was the first year that I had given myself space because of what I did 2 years ago in my sabbatical. Like I had finally gotten to the point where I had the space and I signed up for a writing retreat and I went to Scotland because I needed like, you know, the extra kick. Yeah. And it was, the timing was divine. Like it was just perfect, you know, and I received like just insert sparkles here, everything that I needed on that trip to then be ready to go. And so the momentum has carried into this year and it's just time. And I just know that all of a sudden, you know, I mean, yeah, we've had these ideas for so long, but when it's time, who is stopping us? Only ourselves.
We are. Yes. We have to decide.
We've got to prioritize. Yeah.
And that's the scary thing. Right? Like, because you're prioritizing something that there's no guarantee that it's going to work. There's no guarantee somebody's going to pay you. There's no guarantee it's even good. And you're like, right. I still am going to prioritize this.
Yep. And therefore, it's like, yeah, that's the thing.
It's an act of like hopeful lunacy, I think. But like, I can't not do it. I can't not do it. You can't not do it.
No. Yeah. It's
what's there. Worse, right? Like, I started asking myself this question, like, what is worse that I continue to avoid doing this and it's eating me alive and then I'm bummed because I've done everything else for everyone else but I didn't do this thing that I really wanted to do? Or is it worse to do the thing, do the best I can, and it quote unquote failing but learning a bunch of things in the process? Clearly when you put them side by side, it's worse to not do the thing.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of that, I think too, there's probably a lot of fear involved in that because of the unknowns, right? We don't know all of those things that you just listed off. But worse is not trying. Worse is not
well, because
doing the thing you feel called to do.
The respect that you have for yourself, for what you really have to say. Like, I think it's, when it comes down to it, like to me, and I'm pretty sure for you too, this is a same question, like it's a question of your relationship with yourself and what you can create in this lifetime. And it's not about work. It's not about career. It's like, I do genuinely believe it's like, it's about being fully self-expressed in this lifetime. And I love how you speak with this depth of like, you choose to spend the days that you have alive doing this thing. And so when I think about Translated, or when you think about your book, isn't it true that this is like, this is about self-expression of like your existence? It sounds so profound, but I really do believe that is why it's worth doing.
That's totally it.
Yeah. And if eventually someone cares enough to pay us to do the work, tant mieux, even better.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
Well said.
That's why I need the expressions in different languages. I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah,
like,
just let's put make captions. These universal, because we all need to share these because they're so great.
I love it.
Oh, man. Okay. I know that we could just keep going. I know that we could.
I know.
Because this, I know. You're so fascinating. And I think that we just speak. I use this phrase a lot, and now it means even more. I think we're speaking the same language here, just like in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's do it again somewhere around the world, like maybe in person.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. That sounds lovely. Okay, so for now, we're going to put all of your stuff in the show notes. Shout it out again so that everybody knows where to go to find you and your show Translated.
Cool. So yes, you're all officially co-producers if you want to join. Just watch. So my YouTube channel is youtube.com/JoeFranco, JoeFranco. And my Instagram, where I put all of the clips and the bites and like random stories, it's instagram.com/JoeFranco, FRANCO. And that's Joe with no E because I am a lady.
Good point. Let's love that you're adding that. Yes.
Gotta disclaim it.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh, Joe, thank you. This has been so fun.
Jackie, so fun. Thank you. I'm just stoked. And please tell me when your book is out so I can blast it on my platforms as well.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. I will see you somewhere in the world. Thank you so much for your time, and best of luck with everything with your show going forward.
Thank you so much. Happy travels, everyone.